You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
Hey, you ready to rock this place out, dude?
Ultimate hype man.
He was on fire last night.
And it's all because you guys like to drink beer.
Word association before we get you out of here. Eddie Johnson.
Twister.
When will we see Simon Borg taking over Snapchat and MLS?
Do you know
what Snapchat is, since winky faces are not your thing?
No, I do, and Snapchat wanted all my contacts, and I refused to give it my contacts.
Simon, you are an idiot.
We can't prove it.
That's why he's here.
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com and SiriusXM FC Channel 85. I am Andrew Wiebe. With me on this fine Monday, the one, the only, the incomparable Simon Borg, back from the, I'm not going to say dead, but in an ETR sense, it's been a while. It's Nick Rosano here as well. Go ahead, Simon. People have been clamoring for your return. We finally convinced you back.
I'm positive they're not clamoring. But I'm here only because the regular crew members are not.
So you're
Ben Bear.
So whoa.
What?
So
what?
You've removed yourself from regular crew.
For the last couple of weeks, I've been regular.
We got to vote on that. I don't think you can come out here and make those decisions on your own. How you doing, Rosie? I know. Do you feel special? Do you feel Simon back? I mean, does it have a little cachet to it? I mean, I know Ben and I and Dave are okay, but this is a big entry for you.
I don't know. This is starting to feel more and more like sort of an ensemble cast we've got going on here.
Yeah.
Rosie was put off by the fact that I came in here and I said, what are we going to fight about on this show?
Yeah, that's...
So I'm not sure Nick is enjoying this much.
I wasn't surprised in the least.
No, back to the golden days. Look, we've got a great show for you here. A good interview in the second segment. We've been lucky the last, 6 months or so to get a few folks in office. We really enjoyed the DC United guys when they came by recently. Of course, Kyle Martino. Now we have Chicago Fire rookie midfielder Matt Polster. He joined us last week. The armchair analyst and I sat him down. We talked to him about rookie life, what's going on with him, what's going on with the Fire, what's going on with the U.S. U-23s. So you want to check that one out. Stick around for the segment. Second segment. Let's see, before we get into things, it was a wild week in MLS, some big stuff going down. Let's talk about Scarf Timber. Anybody have a good guess for what that is? I assume that's pretty clear. A celebration of scarves at MLSstore.com. We thank them for all the swag that we give away on a regular basis. We've still got a bunch of stuff. Email in. We'll give it to you. But September is Scarf Timber from the 14th to the 27th. 25% off all scarves. You can do that with promo code SCARVESUP25. So go stock up. Go get some early Christmas presents. Do what you got to do, whatever that might be.
Where's the scarf in your merchandise?
I actually collect scarves, which is, I mean, that's a very nerdy thing for me. But when I go on trips, I get a scarf because it's a easily packable item that really identifies with the locale for me. So that's...
So I put jersey first, and I think a lot of people put jerseys first.
But do you wear jerseys? When's the last time you wore a jersey?
Even if I don't wear them, the fact that I have them... It means something to me. I don't know what I'm going to do with them or what's going to happen.
Are these game used, or are you just collecting replicas?
No. You collect the replicas. So, I mean, if you're in a city that you're visiting, I like to come away with the jersey. I know other people who like to come away with the scarves.
Well,
for me, then game program. I'm still game program.
Oh boy, back in the day. Oh boy,
and pins. I do like the pins.
You have any soccer collections?
I never got into the pins, to be honest with you. They would like give them out at some of the games. Just like they're too small.
Where I can,
you can't show them to anybody.
Yeah. Where I can, pennants, little pennants.
I always want the big pennants.
I have those for baseball. I have a couple like San Francisco sports teams.
And I'm talking about the pennants they exchange. The captain's
okay. Yeah, I don't have any of those. Not lucky enough to be on that side of things. Yeah, I don't have the $80 for the replica like Simon does when he goes on trips. What are you gonna do? Let us know what do you collect? Maybe you're not a scarf person, maybe you're something else. Either way, Scarf Timber, MLSstore.com to the 27th, 25% off, Scars Up 25. Let's jump into the weekend, guys. I think clearly the most impressive result, for me at least, and feel free to disagree, came on Sunday. Toronto hosting the New England Revolution. New England, red hot. Red hot. This is just what they do in the month of August and beyond lately. 3-1 win for them. Jovinko had a good game here. Josie Altidore played. All the big guns playing for Toronto FC. Maybe Benoit Cheroux, the lone missing among their stars. It doesn't matter. This Revs team just gets it done. Jermaine Jones is back. MV Lee is on form. This Revs team is doing what they did last time, guys. July 30th in 2014, from them on, they had 10 of 14 were wins. July 18th is the turning point this year. Five losses before that. Now they're 6 of 7 wins. They got 6 games left. It's a carbon copy.
How many of those were with Jermaine Jones this year? I haven't looked. When did he come back?
He came back, I think, at the very beginning of this run.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I believe so. I think it was 2 games into it, maybe. So
same thing as last year.
Same thing as last year. MV Lee throughout that period has been killing it. He's not MV Lee this year, but he's having a great season nonetheless. 3 goals, 5 assists in his last 7. This team, I think, is now pushing themselves up into the top 2 in the East. It's them and the Red Bulls, based on form, I think.
You know what I think is different, though, about this Revs team? Is Diego Fagundes. There's something about him that I think is different than any other year he's played in MLS. And he has a certain personality, a certain swagger about him, where before he looked like a kid playing.
Yeah. That first year was kind of like, oh, shucks, this is happening for me. This is great. But this year it's like, yeah, this is what I do.
Exactly. Exactly. Even he scores a beautiful goal served up by Lee Wynn, and it's almost like nothing happened. I think it's a finalist for Goal of the Week. No?
Yeah, I think it is too. A one-timer from the outside of the box. But Jermaine Jones, Nick, I mean, he opens it up for the rest of the team. No, he's the guy that allows everybody to be at their best.
Yeah, he's great, and you see it kind of. I mean, you see it kind of with the U.S. national team too. When he came back with Peru, just having him healthy on the field, playing in central midfield, and the guy of his work rate. His defensive ability really helps in any team. Yeah,
although I argue he should have been sent off in this game.
Oh, really?
There was an offense.
There's an instant replay preview for you.
Yes. You'll see it on Instagram. There was a foul that I think should have resulted in his second yellow.
Yep. Scott Coldo, I think, is the one that allows Jones to be Jones. If we're looking at the U.S., that's kind of always what we say. Like, is he really the holding midfielder? I just don't think he is. So you give him freedom. You let him go out. You win the ball. He's the one that rotates it in that midfield along with Lee Wynn to those outside guys. On Fagundes, I think it's the competition, Simon. I think now he's got to do so much to stay in the lineup that, you know, he proves it in training, and it's not a mystery to him anymore that he's going to be successful and that he deserves to be on the field. It's impressive stuff.
And that's a testament, I think, to the roster they've built there, in that they have so many guys pushing for places. I mean, you look at this roster, and Juan Agudelo can't even get into the lineup these days.
Kellen Rowe gets pushed out in this game, and it's not a big deal. He comes in to score. Teal Bunbury, who was such a force for them last year in the playoffs, not doing too much. But we're talking a lot about the Revs. We have to talk about the double nutmeg, right? I mean, Jovinko, maybe this doesn't go for the Reds fans the way they want it, but this might be the on-ball play of the year. I mean, spinning backheel nutmeg through Scott Caldwell's legs and then right through Farrell. I mean, this is – nobody else in MLS does this, right?
I heard others talking in the office, and they were saying, is that instinct? Do you plan to do that? Like, you just do it? Like –
It's instinct. Oh, I think after a certain amount of repetition, it has to be instinct. I mean, I'm not gonna say like sometimes when you're playing, you kind of feel it. I'm not gonna say I'm gonna do a double nutmeg against anybody sometimes you kind of feel it, right? You know, the little back, like I've done, you know, the little back heel, and just. Sometimes it comes off, sometimes it doesn't.
Lack of professional respect. I know the nutmeg is
really?
Not.
You think so?
What do you think? Like, I mean,
no.
I don't know.
It
the nutmeg,
all the time.
To do it once, but then back to
like,
back.
I think you can't
make it a practice.
I think there's a difference if it's isolated on the wing and he faces you up and he's going for the nuts. But I think in this case, it's just what's the best way to get through this guy? Ball's sitting in the right spot for me. He's got his wickets open, boom, and then it's really almost a 50-50 with him and Farrell. He pokes it through, well done. Toronto, their attack is good. We know that. The defense is still a huge question mark for the Reds. A lot of home games the rest of the season. They are really fighting for position out there in the East in the playoffs. I think they'll make it, but we'll have to see what happens. The other team up there in Eastern Canada, the Montreal Impact, they went to L.A. this weekend, and I think we all basically agreed that this was liable to be a blowout. They gave up 3 goals to the Fire. And then somehow, some way, they shut out the Galaxy. Now, these are the last 9 visitors to StubHub. The goals allowed. 6-5-5-4-5-5-3-5-5. Literally one team under 4 goals allowed. How did they do it? How did Montreal do this, Simon?
And without Laurent Simon.
Yeah, no Simon.
As well. I think they came out and they just played. They just played. That was what most impressive. You asked me about the most surprising result of the weekend. To me, it's Montreal holding LA at 0-0. Because they didn't bunker in. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at that result, you probably, if you didn't watch the game, you think they maybe, you know, packed it in and LA's frustrated. But they played toe-to-toe with them. And it helps when you have Drogba. You can already see the Drogba impact on the Montreal Impact and how they just are on the field, how they take the field with no fear, really.
And I think you got to give some credit. You talk about being without Laurent Simon. I think you got to have some credit to Victor Cabrera, who I thought had a good game. He always seemed to be in the right place at the right time. And I guess that's kind of he feels like kind of the lost guy when you're talking about Laurent Simon. I mean, this is a 22-year-old kid who came out of the River Plate youth system. He's no slouch. I mean, he had some. He didn't always get on the field earlier in the season.
He was good in CCL though.
He was
A right back though. Mm-hmm. You look at him; he doesn't look like the prototypical center back because of his size. But he plays that position really well.
Lefebvre next to him, a big result for Montreal. A note from this one: Giovanni Dos Santos left at halftime. That's not good news for Galaxy fans or Altri fans. There's some rumbling about his groin, possible injuries there. We'll see what happens with him. All the updates, of course, at MLSsoccer.com as the week goes on. Moving down the list here of results Saturday night as well, late into the night. San Jose won, Seattle won. This looked like it was going to be a big win for San Jose. Big because these two teams really are battling there for those, you know, fourth, fifth, sixth spots out west. Right now it's San Jose sitting on the outside looking in. That's because Obafemi Martin did what Obafemi Martin does. I mean, this is maybe the most technically impressive goal of the weekend, goal of the month, goal of the year, back to goal, throws his leg at it, somehow gets on top of it. I mean, just the flexibility to put this one in is pretty impressive. And it didn't matter. Once again, Seattle disappointing. Disappointing. Didn't do what they were supposed to do or they expect to do with the star power in that lineup.
Well, I mean, I think Seattle is what they've been all year. They wait for their big stars to pull off a play. And by the way, now they have an Andreas Ivanschitz, who's one of those big stars. He had what, and this is instant replay teaser number two, what looked like a good go-ahead goal to me. He was called for a handball, but he made an impact when he came on. So I think they rely on their difference makers. Less so about generating soccer, but more so individual plays.
Generating special moments. Yep. You mentioned Ivanschitz. He came in for Brad Evans. He left at halftime. He had an issue in this one. Took a ball in the face. That's what they're saying is probable for the reason he left. Roman Torres also left before halftime. Yeah. A left knee issue. That's bad news for the Sounders.
Yep.
And Nelson Valdez also out. He had an issue later on in the game. The big question here, though, Nick, is Ozzie Alonso. I mean, if you don't have Ozzie Alonso, this team completely changes. I want to throw out a scenario to the both of you. First to Nick here. There's five games left. They're not safe, and they have a tough schedule. They're at Vancouver, at Sporting KC, LA at home, at Houston, RSL at home. That's not an easy schedule. There's no guarantee they get in. San Jose has got a bunch of home games. Portland's playing pretty well. Sporting KC, we'll talk about them in just 1 second. They're nose diving. Is there a realistic scenario here that the Sounders fail to get this thing done?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, for the reasons you just said, they have a tough schedule. San Jose plays two away games the rest of the season. One of them is here at NYCFC this weekend. The way they're playing, I mean, they dropped a couple points here and there, but you'd have to think that they definitely have the favorable schedule if they can stay healthy. And also there are teams coming up from behind. I mean,
that's the big one to me.
There's, you know, Houston, RSL, Colorado have all put themselves in the mix. Maybe not quite as favored as San Jose,
let's say.
But I think especially if we don't have Ozzie Alonso, there's a real worry there.
There's some strange stuff going on too with Siggy Schmidt here, Simon. Yeah. We're not sure what's going on. He had a health issue. They say he's back in training. Do you think that might have something to do with it?
You wonder how just mentally it affects the team and just not that they would be concerned for Siggy Schmidt, assuming there's nothing to be concerned about, mm-hmm. Although he did not travel to the game, but more so it just, you know, throws everything off when you don't have your coach barking out his usual orders at a game. And you mentioned there's two big away games now at Vancouver, at Sporting KC coming up next, and we don't know if it's confirmed whether he'll be traveling to those at all. So I think it all plays into it.
A lot of trouble here right now in Soundersland. A good draw for them this weekend on the road, though. They'll ultimately probably be happy with that one. They got to get some wins, though, in those last five. I mentioned Sporting Kansas City. It's getting bad. I think I've coined the Weeby curse because the moment I labeled them the best team in the league, they went straight down. The slide started on August 19th. They now got four losses in five. The most recent at Orlando, they had two road games, remember, this week. At Portland, a 0-0 draw there. Then they fly cross-country to Orlando, a 3-1 win for the Lions. No Kaká in this one. He was held out. Breck Shea did make his return from that hernia injury. He had an assist in this one to Brian Rochas. Adrian Winter with two goals, big for them. I mean, this is what Orlando had hoped for the whole season, to do something special at home. It just hadn't happened often enough. But Sporting Kansas City, their fans, beyond blaming me on Twitter, are now starting to talk about how maybe this is a replica of their 2014 season. We talked about the Rebs on the upward trajectory at the end of the year. Last year, Sporting KC, after August 23rd, 2-1-7 the rest of the way. After August 19th, they've lost 4-5. How worried would you be if you're Peter Vermees?
I'm not worried, only because I look at a team that what this is a product of is you've had players in and out of the lineup. They were without their starting goalkeeper, Tamelia. They're switching out guys. They have a new left back now. Seth Sinovic has now worked his way back into the lineup. To me, it's a little bit of the turnover that's been forced by the schedule. They've had a few midweek games here. They've had a schedule crunch. Mm-hmm. I think once they get into a rhythm and players are now coming back, I think that's what played into their good spell. I think they had the regulars and continuity.
Well, the problem is I don't think they're getting the most out of Dom Dwyer, are they? I mean, Nemeth had a great goal in this game, but we're not seeing the same Dom Dwyer as we saw last year, and it seems like they're having trouble getting him service.
That's the issue.
It is, and I think there's also, when you have Nemeth in there, I mean, he's been a great addition, but then it feels like it's almost been a little bit of back and forth between him and Dwyer as to who's taking the reins in the attack, and it seems like kind of Dwyer is the guy who really, you know, he wants to be up there, front and center, getting all the opportunities, getting all the service. But I'm not so optimistic about their upcoming schedule. They do have a game in hand. So against pretty much all the Western Conference teams, two against Seattle. But they have a full slate of games against their direct competitors. They have two more midweek games coming up in the stretch run, and so I think that's just going to be. That's going to create some more of the issues that we've been talking about.
But even when you do look at their the losses, it's not like they've been blown out of games. Like there's not, I don't know that there's a game that I would say I'm concerned about.
There was that 5-0 loss against San Jose at home. I mean, they had another big loss there.
And they're going to San Jose too.
At San Jose is one of their.
That was a fluke game. But they're usually in most games. But one thing that strikes me about their team. We don't talk about Graham Zusi in the way that we used to in the past.
We don't, do we? He's had a lot of injuries this year. He's back in the lineup for this one, back home in Orlando. But, you know, that's the issue, I think, is it's so much onus and the productivity was placed on Fallhaber when he was producing, when he was, you know, racking up the goals, racking up the assists, getting the MVP conversation. That's when I was out there making videos saying this was the best team in the league. Well, it's not quite been that way for them. We'll have to see if they can get some help around both he and Dwyer. We'll see what happens with Sporting KC the rest of the way. The Crew look like a good bet to make it out east. They had a big win in Philly, 2-1. Kai Kamara, two more goals. He's up to 20. He's got 7 assists, too. He could hit 20 and 10 this season, Nick. Does he have a shot at it?
20 and 10, definitely. I think you said he's already at 20. He's 3 more assists over. They do only have 5 games left.
Yeah,
but
it's,
knowing
it's a little
the,
bit tough
but
there.
Like the way the Crew play, you know, I think he could be involved in setting some up. I don't think he's going to hit that magical 27 number.
Yeah, it's tough.
But I mean, all credit to him. He's been having a great season.
A pretty good run here the rest of the way for them. At DC, Portland at home, at New York, at Toronto, DC at home again. He is better at home. Simon, is he MVP? Should he be MVP? If let's say he gets 23, 24 goals, he wins the Golden Boot, and the Crew would go to the playoffs. Does he get it over Jovinko, or do you still push Jovinko into that conversation?
Honestly, it depends on this last stretch and how influential either one or the other is for their team's fortunes. And right now, Kamara is very important to Columbus Crew SC. If they make a run for the Supporters Shield even, I think then you have to strongly consider him. If Toronto especially keep withering here at the end. Because Jovinko, he had a game over the past weekend that was, you know, he had good plays here and there. He had a double nutmeg. But that's not enough. Like, you really need end product. And he's had it in most games, just not in that one. So, to me, the last stretch of games is important. What's interesting to me is, I don't know that Columbus gets enough credit. And every chance I get, I tout them. They have the best playing style in all of MLS.
A legion of mailbag writers just went crazy for that. Because we get that all the time, that we're not giving the Crew enough credit.
Not nationally. And I wonder if that comes with winning. Like, you have to win and do it. I don't think Real Salt Lake got the credit until they won MLS
you're
Cup.
You're probably right.
And then people started
I don't know if RSL deserved the credit until they won MLS Cup. Because you remember, that was a team that was still kind of in those beginning stages of building. But I can see similarities between the two now. You have MLS veterans on the one side in the crew, and they also got a bunch of young guys that need a little time to come together. The difference, I think, is center back. Nat Borchers, Olave, RSL were set. Yeah. I'm not sure right now that the crew are set.
I mean, you'd hope Gaston Saro would be that guy, but he has his own injury issue.
A little tough times for the center back crew there. Well, center back crew. That was just a misstep. That was a misstep. Move on here. Dallas 2, New York 1. Dallas now number 1 in MLS in points per game. They beat NYCFC. I think it's basically over for NYCFC. I believe that's 4 losses with all DPs in the lineup. All 3 DPs, I should say. Pirlo, Lampard, and Villa. That's tough. I think it's over for them. Jason Christ this weekend, he praised the effort after this loss. That, to me, says the playoffs are out of reach. That, to me, says they're just going for moral victories the rest of the way. Maybe I'm wrong. But Michel with the play of the game in this one, Olympico, he's done this one before. He actually did it in 2013, so it's been a little under 2 years since he last did it. You all remember Thierry Henry back in 2012, Marco Papa also in 2012, and David Beckham, some guy named David, 2011. A lot of these recently. I contend that Michel did not mean this, that this was not an effort to put the ball in the back of the net, as we've seen previously. Thierry Henry comes to mind in that sense. Am I off here? Does that take away from the feat?
See, this is my issue with debating whether he means it or not, because I think that takes away from like the incredible amount of skill it takes to serve it like that in the first place. Yeah. I mean, you're putting the ball in a very dangerous position to whip it with that kind of pace. With that swing, it creates problems. And, you know, I think this was definitely a better effort than his previous one in Seattle, I believe it was, where it was wind-assisted.
Yeah, I think it was Spurning that got taken to task on that.
Was that wind-assisted? Because that looked
beautiful.
Or it might have
been the Papa one. I forget which one. There was one of these that was definitely like a big wind-assist.
The one, and you said he's done it before.
Which is the craziest thing.
Right. It requires an element of luck to be sure, but I wouldn't go as far as to call it a fluke.
Okay, it's not a fluke. He serves a great near post ball, but I got to wonder what the folks out there think. I mean, he's just trying to put on the near post. Teshua Kandeli moves 6 inches, it hits him in the chest and goes in anyway. But great goal from Michel, big win for FC Dallas. Also happening on the weekend here, Colorado a 1-1 draw with DC at home, Houston losing at home, RSL 3, Houston 1, Nick Raimondo. He stood on his head in this one. Go and watch Wells Fargo Plays the Knights on MLSsoccer.com. It's pretty incredible stuff from Nick Raimondo. He kept them in this game. On Houston's side, Kubo, Bruin, and Barnes started this together, but the real highlight from an attacking perspective, Burrito Martinez looks like the real deal for Real Salt Lake. Go check out his highlights. Good stuff from him. That's it from the weekend. Let's look ahead real quick, Nick, and you're our man on CCL. Of course, we're back with the group stage here Tuesday and Wednesday. Tuesday, DC versus Arabe Unido, 8 p.m. on FS2. RSL is at Santa Tecla, 10 p.m. on Fox Soccer Plus. You have a doubleheader there on Tuesday. On Wednesday, Vancouver hosting Olympia. Remember, that's that Seattle-Vancouver Olympia group. That's a big one. 10 p.m. in, 10 p.m. Eastern, Sportsnet 1, Sportsnet World. Tell us what these results could mean for these teams in the grand scheme.
Well, I'll start just by going straight down the schedule. First, DC United already in great position, and they can actually clinch a spot in the knockout rounds with a win or a draw.
They've got this thing figured out in the knockouts. They even play their first team half the time, and they go and get wins.
It's great for them. I mean, it's the perfect way to handle it, especially when you're – I mean, it's perfect position for them when they're kind of middling in the league. I mean, obviously they're not going to miss the playoffs, but they haven't been playing great. Mm-hmm. So to be able to go out and play some reserves in these kinds of games and still not have to worry about qualifications.
Big for
awesome.
Them. What about the Vancouver Olympia group? That's the one we're all really interested in. Do they have to win that, right?
Yeah, it's a must win for Vancouver. No doubt about it. And if Olympia wins this one, and you know, they were very close to beating Seattle in Seattle, then they're in pole. Then you could see neither Vancouver nor Seattle advance from this group. They're in pole position if they win.
Big stakes here.
And even if Vancouver lose, they still have to. Or even if Vancouver win, they still have to go on the road to Seattle to Olympia. So I mean, if they don't get all 3 points from them, they're done.
Yep, tough stuff there in CCL. Some big games in midweek. Guys, there's 3 games on Wednesday night. Let's real quick look at those. New England, New York, clash of the 2 best teams in the East there. 7:30 p.m. MLS Live. NYC hosting Toronto, also at 7:30. A little star parade at Yankee Stadium. And then San Jose, Montreal. That is huge for playoff positioning for both these teams. 10:30 p.m. Eastern. I'm giving you one game to watch. What you going to do, Simon?
It's New York City, Toronto, because I know Nick has already written New York City FC off. But I think if they win this game against Toronto, you're looking at Toronto with 37 points and New York City FC with 31. 6 points with five games to play, not totally out of the realm. And that's without knowing what Montreal is going to do with all these games in hand. Montreal going to San Jose. Mm-hmm. That's not a sort of thing. So
talk that they may send some players home, that they may not have the full squad there out there in San Jose. So.
And San Jose is a tough place to play. They play really tight at home, San Jose does.
And,
so.
And that's also that big game in hand for San Jose. They have that game in hand over some of those teams. This is the one.
There you go. I'm going to go with New England, New York. I think that's the best one on style. That's what I'll tune into. Actually, you know what? I'm actually going to be at that New York City game, so maybe I won't. It'll be New York City, Toronto for me. Let us know what you think about this week in MLS. Any CCL results ahead at Extra Time Radio, extratime at MLSsoccer.com. Don't go away. When we come back, Matt Polster on Rookie Life.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at MLSsoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hey, this is Kyle Beckerman of Real Salt Lake, and you're listening to Extra Time Radio. I'm a soul man.
Back now on Extra Time Radio. SiriusXM FC Channel 85, MLSsoccer.com. Here with a very, very special guest. We've been blessed over the last year or so to have a number of guys in office. Matt Doyle is here. That's not who I'm talking about. I'm talking about a different Matt. Matt Polster of the Chicago Fire sitting down with us in studio. Matt, in NYC. How's it feel, man?
I love it so far. I just got in from Manchester, just kind of getting back on the time. So just since being here, it's been awesome.
Back in from Manchester, for those who don't know, coming back from US U23 camp, got a call up to Andy Herzog's team. But let's start with the Fire. Let's start with your rookie season. We're three-fourths of the way through the year now. How do you feel different maybe than when you came in, than when you were drafted? What has changed about you and your game and what you're about and how you go about your business?
I obviously, coming in, I was just super excited to play. Obviously, I was like emotional and I wanted to become a professional. So coming into the game or to the team, I was just buzzing the whole time, obviously, and I was pretty energetic in a lot of the beginning of the games, getting an early yellow card in my first start. But as the season's gone on, I definitely think I've matured a lot. My movement's been much better, and I think I've been able to like take over the game through passing, my movement. So I definitely think as the games have gone on, I think I've definitely matured.
Now, you talked about emotion. I was at the Superdrafter. I remember it was it was one of those moments, but you're shaking your head here, but those are one of those special moments that, you know, for you as a player, as a person, but also for fans to see how much it really means to guys to be a part of this league. What do you remember about that moment? You shook your head. I mean, do you hear about that from anybody? Is this the first time you've talked about it in a while?
I think I got a little stick from the team definitely early on. They asked me, so how did the draft go, kind of thing. So,
right. Yeah,
they got at me a little bit. But, yeah, I was emotional. It's something that I wanted to do, and I knew it was going to be a different path than a lot of players, obviously, coming through. I didn't get a lot of looks. So to have that opportunity to be drafted that high, and it was definitely emotional, and I was very excited, obviously.
Now, you come from SIU Edwardsville, where you played your college soccer. And for those that don't know, that's outside of St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Where did you grow up? What, you know, what was the environment, and how did you become a guy who's known more from his movement and his passing than other characteristics that we usually see in American midfielders, which is defensive midfielders, which is, you know, tough tackling and maybe a more rugged type of
game. Not that you're not a tough tackler.
He did get a persistent infringement yellow within about 3 minutes of his debut, which I think is a record.
Yeah. I definitely, obviously I was born in Wisconsin, but I only lived there for 3 years. And then I lived another 3 years in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
I was moving around because my dad, and then he landed in Las Vegas, and then I grew up there. So I spent my entire life basically growing up there. And I think I personally got lucky with the coaches that I got to be coached by. George McKenna, who played with the New York Cosmos for a little bit. And then I got picked up after that with Patrick Lawrence. who's just tactically incredible. So I know in Las Vegas there's not that many great coaches, so I definitely got the benefit of finding those two. And I think they definitely pushed my game that much further, and they didn't look just at the side of, like, winning games. Like, I think I won State Cup once in my time being in Las Vegas, so they definitely looked at the development side more than the winning side, which was massive, obviously.
When you hear the conversation about going pro to USL now for kids that are 16, 17, 18, or maybe a year or two out of college, or just going to college, how do you see this kind of development pathway now in the U.S. based on your own experiences? Because I think we all get really wrapped up in this idea that, you know, elite players have to be in a professional environment as a teenager. Mm-hmm. And that may be true for Europe because it's what they do, but I think we've seen over and over in the U.S. that that's not a one-size-fit-all thing. Guys come from different places.
No, I agree. I don't think but I think in Europe they're definitely more advanced. They're definitely a little bit further. I definitely noticed that in the England match. A lot of those kids are like 96s and 97s that were incredible. Ruben Loftus-Cheek was by far the best player on the field, and he's like 18 years old.
Yeah.
So I don't think there's one path, obviously, that says this is the right way to do it. But I think if you go through a system like the academy and you have the right coaching, I definitely think it's a lot better for your development, and you'll be that much further ahead of other players. But for me, going through college, finding, again, the perfect coach, Kevin Kalish, and then Scott Donnelly, tacticians of themselves, definitely helped me be where I am today.
So if you could have hit a USL program or you could have gone through the academy, that's what you would have preferred?
I think it would have been better off for myself, because I think when you're just in the system and you know what, and you're learning the system at a young age, like those FC Dallas kids, they understood the play that, who do they play? Columbus, right?
Mm-hmm.
They all understood the system already coming through the their academy, so they could go into the first team and play right away. I mean, that's what a lot of clubs overseas do, and I think if you can get into that system and understand what they want from you, it's easier to get better and get into the first team, get minutes.
Now, you had the time to mature in college. Now you're coming in as a rookie. Do you see a difference, or do you think mentally you would have been ready to play professionally when you were younger? Do you see a difference between you and guys maybe who, like you said, are homegrowns?
I definitely don't think I was ready, so I think college was probably better for me. But I think there's players that would prefer to go through academy than college, yes. So
then there are guys like Will Trapp who played a couple years in college and then left early. Yeah, so there are – yeah.
There's different paths. Like not every – there's no clear-cut way to become a professional, obviously. I think we've all seen that, so –
So you're in college, and you said it really helped you tactically, but then you hit MLS. What changed on the tactical side? We always hear from players, hey, what's the difference? It's speed to play, speed to play, speed to play. Go down a little bit deeper into how the game is actually played and how your role maybe changes and how you have to think about the game.
I think – I don't know. I just think college is super hectic, so I don't think the speed of play is – obviously it's faster here, and I think your thought process has to be faster. You have to be you have to know what you're going to do three, four steps ahead of the next guy. But I think the biggest thing is just consistency. I think in college, I could get away with having a really average game. I think here, if I had an average game, I would be found out early on in the game, and people would expose it, really. I think just consistency, playing, having a high level every game, being as clean as possible on the ball is definitely the big change for me.
Did you have a moment early on in this season at all where you had maybe a little bit of an off time and you said, oh man, I can't get away with this?
I think KC was my first really like bad performance. I thought, I don't know why I had such a bad, like I felt like I had a bad game, but I don't know. I couldn't tell you why it was that bad. I looked at it multiple times.
Have you had a wow moment? Did you have that first moment where you're like, oh, this is really happening, or I can't believe I'm on the field with this guy or whatever?
Like playing against somebody or
whatever it is, that moment when you realize that you're a professional and you're playing at the highest level?
I think early on, I think when I saw the jersey, I think when you see, obviously you play for the name on the front, but I think when you see that your name's on the back, I think you're like, wow, I'm actually playing for this team. So I like preseason, I think when they gave us our jerseys, that's when I really was like, this is happening kind of thing.
Did you do stuff with your jerseys? Have you swapped jerseys? Do you have any like mementos so far through this?
I swapped with a couple rookies, Connor Brandt, who plays for New York FC, and then Christian Roldan, who plays for Seattle. I just kind of want to. I think those players will be good coming up through the system, and I think they're going to be bigger players. So I thought getting their jersey early on would be pretty cool.
Buy low, sell high. Buy low, sell high. Who's the guy that maybe you've learned the most from? Because I look at the Fire and I think about, okay, who might be a guy that is going to be kind of in your ear or talking to you, and Big Red, Jeff Lenowitz, he's the first guy I think of, but I wonder maybe who you've leaned on to kind of work out some of the kinks. And
I've leaned on a lot of players, I think. There's definitely not one specific player. I've definitely – Mikey Stevens chatted up my ear a little bit. McGee, Lorenowitz, Maloney, Watson. I mean, I think a lot of players have definitely, like, helped me understand it. Obviously, you said Jeff. Jeff's always told me, like, hey, in this moment, do this instead of that. McGee just said, like, after a bad – performance or bad training, just kind of like let it go, don't worry about it, just go down to the next training. So it's definitely not one player. I think it's definitely a group of guys that have helped me advance.
And you've had to advance in different positions, really. You've played all over so far this season, right back, defensive midfield, box-to-box midfield. Are you a box-to-box midfielder? Are you a defensive midfielder? I know you're not a right back.
I appreciate that. I do. I think I can play the 6 or 8 role. Mm-hmm. I do. I think with my passing range, and I think I have good vision, I think 6 definitely suits me a little bit more. Mm-hmm. I can control the game. I think my best position is number 6.
Yep.
But right now, just getting games, getting minutes is definitely what counts for me, just because I want to be on the field. I love playing. And just the experience of it is good. So if they want to play me right back, I will. But I definitely prefer number 6 role.
Who do you look around in the league or outside the league, you know, and say, okay, here's a guy that I'm watching. Here's a guy who I might be able to pull some things from.
Easy. Steven Gerrard, by far best player. Liverpool supporter. So I definitely huge fan of Steven Gerrard. Back in the day, Xabi Alonso. And also Paul Scholes, but I'm not a Man U fan, so. But I like those 3 players personally.
Anybody in the league that you look at and you say, man, are you played against so far this year? And you're like, this guy has something figured out here.
Benny Fellhaber, I think he's been incredible. I think in the KC game, definitely struggled to keep up with him a little bit. So I thought he was a really good player.
When you look before you got the call up to the USU 23s, were you looking around and saying, I'm playing as well as these guys that are on that program, or I'm playing better than guys my age, mm-hmm. that I should be a part of that?
I know at the beginning there was a couple chances to go, and and Chicago kind of didn't let me go because we had games, which I understood because Frank called me in and explained it. So I was okay with it. Obviously, I did want to go and show what I had to Andy and the coaching staff. So there's two sides to it. I did want to play with Chicago because I wanted to help us try and make a run for the playoffs, but I also wanted to be in the Toulon tournament, which I know you can't be in 2 places at once. But yeah, it was a tough situation. So when this chance came around, I had a pretty good opportunity, and when I got in, I was super nervous, but when we got to the training field, everything went away, and I felt like I could play with them, so it was nice.
Who's the best player on that team right now?
Jeez.
Besides you.
definitely not me. There's just a lot of good players. I wouldn't say there's one specific player that was just super incredible. I thought we were just a solid team all around. I thought each player was very consistent, clean on the ball, knew what they were going to do with it. So I thought just altogether it was a good, really good scene.
Is there anyone personality-wise you got along with well that you've never met before that you're looking forward to seeing again?
I roomed with Mark Pelosi, so, and he played at Liverpool, so that was kind of cool. Super jealous. Yeah.
Did you hang your Gerrard poster in the room with Pelosi?
No. No. But I did see a picture of him playing against Gerrard, which made me even more jealous. But he was cool. I got along with him really well. Eric Miller. So I hung out with those guys a little bit, and it took me a little bit to get with the team because a lot of those guys knew each other early on, So it took me a couple of days, but after that, I just got along with everybody.
What did Andy talk to you about? What did he say to you? Where did they play you at in this camp?
They played me both at the number six role. I didn't get much feedback, which is probably normal. So
yeah.
Just kind of – but I thought I did play good – well, play well, wow. and the English match that I got minutes in, and then against Qatar, I know it wasn't streamed, but I thought I played pretty well in that game as well.
So how does let's go back to the rookie side of things. How does Matt Polster live his life in Chicago? I mean, it's a nice place to land if you're a young guy. I enjoy Chicago, but what's the lifestyle like? Where are you living? How you you have roommates? What do you do?
I have a roommate, Kingsley Bryce, the other draftee. Mm-hmm. So, but right now he's kind of loaned out in St. Louis. Do miss him a lot of bit actually, because I'm pretty bored without him. But I live in the South Loop. I live about like a 5-minute walk from Sean Johnson and Eric Gehrig. And then Jason Johnson as well. So I kind of hang out with those guys, divvy around a little bit, go up the coast, go to the pier. So there's just something always to do, but I hang out with those guys.
There's a lot of Chicago guys on that roster. McGee, Gehrig, Mikey Stevens, obviously the homegrown guys as well. So are they taking you out and showing you a little bit of the city and where to?
Sean definitely has taken me out a lot more.
Yeah.
So he's probably been the closest one. Same with Eric, because they're so close to me, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And they know the area a lot more because they've been there. Eric lives there.
So you're getting rides in the Lambo, right? I mean, come on.
I did get a ride in the Lambo. It was pretty cool.
How often does he drive it?
He had to drive it a little bit because his other car kind of had to go in the shop. So he was driving it quite a bit.
That's convenient. I mean, yeah, there's no rental car here. No loaner.
I'm sure he wasn't complaining that he had to drive the Lambo. Yeah. So,
is it ridiculous when he like rolls up in it to pick you up?
Yeah, because he loves to go super fast. And it's just absurd.
One of the things we hear about college guys when they get drafted is the amount of free time they have now from not being a student athlete to mm-hmm. just being a pro athlete. Did that shock you? Have you found ways to fill it? Any hobbies?
I haven't gotten a hobby yet. I mean,
outside of FIFA.
Outside of FIFA. That's true. I don't know. I just, because it's been so much soccer, I haven't really had a break. I've been not super tired, but after trainings, I kind of just get a nap in. I'll get on the, go for a walk or something. I don't have any hobbies yet. I might pick up an instrument. I used to play guitar, but I stopped playing since like middle school. So I'm thinking of things to do. But right now, it's mostly Netflix, which I don't complain about.
Are you a soccer junkie? I mean, I'm on Twitter. I see Amobi Okugo. I'm like, I thought I watched a lot of soccer, and this guy is.
Yeah, I'm a huge soccer junkie. I watch a lot of soccer, watch a lot of even YouTube clips of soccer. So I'm always doing something. Oh, I read a couple books. Right now I'm in the Sir Alex Ferguson book, and I just finished The Manager, which talks about like Brendan Rodgers, Jose Mourinho, Sir Alex Ferguson, Ancelotti. So I've definitely been into the soccer book right now.
We have a soccer book club, so we're going to have to get you on.
Okay.
The next one up is Pirlo, which
okay.
I'm struggling
to get through. Yeah, we're still sitting on that one right now, but maybe if we get the Steven Gerrard autobiography, yeah. we'll be able to pull you in on that
Please
one.
Please do. Please do.
So what's it like to, you know, you guys have been really fighting for playoff positioning in a place. It hasn't been the easiest year mm-hmm. to be a member of the Fire. How has kind of the results side gone? How is that a challenge for you and the team?
It's definitely a struggle. It's not easy. I know it's not easy for a lot of the guys that have been in the league. And it's not easy for myself, but I definitely think as a first-year guy that's playing and that I'm just kind of still enjoying the soccer side of it. Obviously, you want to win, but I'm just still buzzing from just being a professional. So it doesn't really bother me too much. It sounds terrible. It does bother me that we're losing, but I'm playing and doing what I love. So it's not – I'm just going out every game and trying to win, you know? So
you're not having an existential crisis about it. Yeah, you're just going out there.
Yeah, I'm enjoying playing professional soccer, and I want to win, and I know that losing is not ideal. So it's been a rough season, but I think obviously we need some help. We need Montreal to lose a couple games because they have a couple games in hand, mm-hmm. and I think we need to win because if we do that, hopefully things just fall into our path and we just hopefully make a jump.
How often are you looking at the standings? How often are people in the locker room talking about it?
It was talked about quite a bit. Obviously, we knew we had to go to Montreal, which was a big game because we played them. Well, we were going to play them twice. So if we picked up those 3 points, that would have been massive. So it's talked about quite a bit because obviously a lot of guys want to be in playoffs and that's what you're here to do, is to win. So it's talked about quite a bit.
Before you came in the league, when you got drafted by Chicago, what was your thoughts about Chicago Fire? Was there any team you were looking at that you thought you'd fit in well with? Well, going into the draft and then, you know, immediately coming out of
it,
what
was your thoughts?
Had
you been an MLS junkie before? Were you watching the league before you came in?
I watched the league a little bit. Honestly, I watched a lot more Premier League stuff. I just watched a lot of Liverpool, a lot of Arsenal, and games like those. But I definitely watched a couple of games in MLS. For me, I just wanted to be a professional, so anywhere would have been incredible. Obviously, Chicago is a super cool place to be picked up by, so I was even more excited about that. But not in particular, no. No team like would have been.
So let's look ahead. One more for you before we get you out of here. We got a long afternoon for you here at MLS Digital. Off season, your future. What are you working on? What's the plan? What do you feel like you have to do to keep progressing? And obviously, you're happy to be playing professionally. But I think the whole thing is that you always want to be on an upward trajectory. So how do you make sure that you're doing that?
Right now, I think just playing after the season, finding little areas to go and get little like stints at different clubs and see the different levels. Maybe I talked with my agent a little bit. Maybe we can go over to like England and just get a small like week or two there and see what that's like and just keep learning. Really, I mean, I'm still young, so obviously learning different like coaching, learning from different coaches, their styles, their tactics, picking little things up like that would be pretty cool.
Big future for Matt Polster with the U23s, with the Chicago Fire. You on Twitter, man? How can people follow you? Instagram, any of this?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram and Twitter. I mean, I'm not a huge social media guy, but I'm on it. So.
All right, give us the Twitter handle. How can people get at you?
I don't know.
You don't know your Twitter handle? You don't remember your Twitter handle?
No, I don't even know what that means. See, I'm so out of social media. It's ridiculous.
At Matt Polster?
Yeah, at Matt Polster or something
there
like
you
that.
Go.
We're
there
gonna
you
blow
go.
You up.
Yeah. We'll tweet it out. We'll find a way. Matt Polster.
Matt Polster. Do you play FIFA online? I mean, maybe they. Yeah,
that's
gamer
what people
ID?
Will get at you.
I don't even know my gamer ID. But I play FIFA online.
There you go. You're going to have to find him somehow. It's all a mystery here on ETR. Big thanks to Matt Polster. Thanks to you guys for joining us. On to the mailbag.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
سلام، این سیون بیتاشو هست از ونکوور وایتکات و تیم ملی. شما دارید گوش میکنید به اکسترا تایم رادیو.
Back now on Extra Time Radio, SiriusXM FC Channel 85 and MLSsoccer.com. I am Andrew Wiebe. With me, Nick Rosano, Simon Borg. Into the mailbag, and we don't have a ton of time, but we've got a very, very interesting question from Dave in Toronto. He says, guys, I think we can all agree the worst thing that could happen this year is for LA to win MLS Cup. 4 in 5 years, boring. With that in mind, and I'm biased because I'm a TFC supporter, which fan base, which team deserves, in all caps, to win this year? Basically, if you give one club the cup for the good of MLS, who would it be?
That's
obviously
a different question to me.
My choice wears red and plays in Toronto. That's true.
Aren't those two different questions?
Yeah, okay, like, that's true. Let's do which fan base, which team deserves to win. You got one? Rosano, I think you got it.
I had two. They're playing this week, New England and New York Red Bulls. Both have been in the league for 20 years. You see New England, got a little bit of Buffalo Bills feel where they've lost 4 MLS Cups. You know,
five.
Yeah. Right. It was 4 until this year. I mean, New York Red Bulls, you know, a lot of people, they're a long-suffering fan base too. Both teams are playing great soccer. It would be a real feel-good story.
I had the Revs on my list.
The Revs?
No, I wouldn't want 6 cup losses on anyone. On any fan.
Okay.
You wouldn't want to wish that on your worst
enemy.
No. I mean,
so that's the team, that's the fan base that deserves it. But how about this? How about for the good of MLS? If you're a casual fan, not a casual fan, you're a non-denominational fan. Let's call it that. I don't have a team. I expect you don't have a team. I don't think any of us really have a team.
No.
Who's that team going to be? If you just want to see the coolest thing happen.
Well, look, Seattle and Portland, everyone knows their supporters. They've done wonders for the league. But if you're talking about, for me, good of MLS, that Toronto wins MLS
Cup. Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
I thought about it from a little more of a, I guess, technical standpoint, whereas I think it would be great for MLS if FC Dallas won MLS Cup, because they've done such a great job investing in their youth, making smart purchases from abroad. And I think it would really demonstrate, I mean, because UCLA, they have the designated players. They're a very well-coached team. I think it would really be great to see that there are multiple ways you can do this. There is not one way you have to work it. You
have
to win
an MLS.
And for a similar reason, I think to reward Toronto's investment in the club.
Yeah. Training,
for them
facility,
to see
the
final
stadium,
product.
All these players. But I think we mentioned the Revs, you know, the long-suffering fans. I mean, yeah, Toronto hasn't suffered
as long.
But at least the Revs have been in a position to win something. At least that they've had something to let it slip out of their fingers. Toronto have
do you
had
know what
nothing.
That, do you know what
they've
the,
never
how much
had
that
anything.
Hurts? How much that hurts to be in the final all those times and come up short?
I don't. I haven't been there. I, you know what? If I'm a casual, if I'm just, you know, if you know what? I'm me, because I'm not a casual fan. I'm just a super nerd. But I think Toronto would be so much fun, man. You know, that city would come alive.
It would.
You know, they really were the ones that got things started on you know, what is it, the supporters section and really having that sort of
the
thing,
culture.
That sort of
yep.
vibe.
Yep.
So I think I'd go with that. Let's see. We're about to get out of here.
It's
Thank
not that
you.
We're rooting for Toronto.
No,
Let's
I'm not
make
rooting
it clear.
For anyone. I just right. want I want cool things to happen as a fan yeah. of this league. I want the coolest thing to happen. So big thanks to Matt Polster. Thank you for joining us here in studio. We want to give you more of those. We'll try for that in the future. Big thanks to you, Simon. Thanks to Nick Rosano. I'm Andrew Wiebe. We'll see you next time.